Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this.
New federal legislation announced last week could deem femicide a first-degree murder offense. It also makes coercive control a crime. That is when a partner sustains a pattern of control, threats, or humiliating behavior against another person, usually a woman. On today's show, Nancy Johnson, Executive Director of Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center, will unpack what this means for abused women in Northumberland. Will it make the county a safer place for women? Plus, she will also look back at November and talk about Woman Abuse Prevention Month. It is wonderful to have back on Consider This Northumberland, Nancy Johnson, Executive Director of Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center. Good to see you, Nancy Johnson.
Good to see you too, Robert. Thanks for having me.
November 25th marked the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women. Then there was the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence that followed. This was punctuated on December 6th, marking the 35th anniversary of L'École Politique massacre, where 14 women were killed and 14 others injured during a shooting spree. Are these commemorative days, weeks, and months having an impact on people's perceptions of gender-based violence?
I think they do. I think, though, that the narrative and the discussions that we're having about gender-based violence are not just happening in November or December anymore. I think there's a lot more attention given to the topic and the issue of intimate partner violence and gender-based violence in a way, really, that we haven't seen for decades, I would say. And, you know, I think that that's a good thing in some way, Robert, that I think we've gotten the ear of government. I think we've gotten the ear of communities that is important for sure. Having said that, though, I think, you know, commemorating those, you know, December 6th is important for Canada, is important for, you know, for the women who died on that tragic day in 1989, and certainly a day that I will always remember. So, yeah, I think the dialogue is happening more readily, which is, in my opinion, a good thing to bring the issue, I think, out of, you know, out of the closet in a way that it has been treated for many decades, I think.
What are the factors that are contributing to this then?
Well, I like to think that I think the advocacy that we've been doing for decades, hopefully is paying off. I think unfortunately the issue is happening often. I think perhaps the media is reporting it a little bit more readily, Robert, and I think one thing that I'm pleased to see in many leaders in our sector, because we've been pushing this, is for the media to call a femicide a femicide. Because oftentimes we know that it would just be reported a homicide, and it didn't give the teeth that we needed for it to begin to show the story of women dying at the hands of men because they are women and they're in an intimate partner relationship. So I think, you know, when people say, why is it important to name it a femicide? It's important to name it a femicide because it gives a story of what happened. And it also gives us data that we didn't have in the past. And it helps to do exactly what I think we are seeing now. The outcome is that we're talking about it because it's being labeled what it is.
I'd like to come back to the topic of femicide in a little bit, but before that, when you look across Northumberland County, how safe are women from violence?
It's still happening. It happens a lot. We do know, I know I've talked about this and on a number of occasions, Robert, on your show about the collaborative partnership that we have with Coburg Police Services. So we are in reviewing all domestics on a weekly basis to look at, to be mindful of trends, to follow up with victims in a timely way, and to offer feedback to, to police if we think that, reporting might be not in, again, we're not responding in a way that we should. Our eyes are always on high-risk situations because our staff are well trained about, those red flags that we need to look for, that the red flags turn into, turn into femicide. So, I think it's unfortunately it's here. What I like to, I am hopeful that more women are reaching out for help, which I think they are in Northumberland County, because I can tell you our services are really busy. And I think that, again, through promotion within our county and hopefully with our community partners, that women are getting serviced at Cornerstone, in a more ready in a ready way, and certainly, again, our demand for services, it remains high, Robert, for sure.
What are your most recent stats?
Last year, our last fiscal year, we served over 3,000 women, children, and youth. So that certainly includes our prevention program, which our prevention programs in the school, as you know, are not targeted; they're universal. Prevention programs. But, again, we know our shelter is full all the time. Our community services across Northumberland County, upwards of 300 individual women for sure. Are yeah. So it's busy for sure. The need is great.
And the trend compared to previous years is continuing to climb, and at what rate?
Yeah, I think it's pretty comparable for over the last few years, anyways, Robert, for sure. Not huge spikes, shall we say. And yeah, we did receive good news from the government that we did receive an increase in funding for our family court support worker, which was an increase that we've been looking for a long time because it's a really busy program. And it's a really important program because what we know, women are most at risk at the point of separation. So it's an important time that we can get in there and do intervention with women and provide wraparound services, which we do at Cornerstone. So that was some good news that we had in the last couple of months.
In your press release, it says that there were more than 35 femicides reported over the past year. You said in that press release that gender-based violence remains high across Ontario. Why do you see it being so high?
I think a few things that we've talked about, Robert, for sure, is I think we're living in some challenging times right now, in terms of how women are perceived, in terms of relationships between men and women, in terms of political climate. A huge amount of intolerance. I think economically, I think that puts a lot of extra stress as well on families for sure. Yeah, I think it's there's some complex times, and as you and I have talked about too, Robert, is the impact of COVID, and we're still seeing some of that residual impact of COVID, particularly with kids. And particularly with women and sort of the traumatic response of COVID and needing to be, isolated in their home, which furthered sort of coercive control and the impacts of that on families, I think was great.
We've mentioned these factors before, and the list seems to be pretty similar each time. Is there something, though, that's different in your mind, that one of those factors is more prevalent, or there are different influences that are shaping those factors that may be different between now as compared to before?
Nothing that I can really put my finger on exactly, Robert. I think perhaps we're living in a society with a little bit less tolerance.
Wait, what do you mean by that? Less tolerance.
I would like to think that in communities, we're still looking out for each other and helping each other out, and not blaming people, not blaming victims. But sometimes, you worry about that. I worry about that.
Why does it make you worry?
I worry about the impact of that type of narrative on vulnerable people, and I include, women and children experiencing violence, of not feeling like they'll be believed, or they're not heard, or they're further isolated, or they don't want to speak out. I think our criminal justice system has a lot of work to do. I think, as we've talked about before too, women and children living in shelters for far too long. That's a whole other challenge onto itself. So, yeah, I think there's some challenging times. Yet at the same time, I have to say, when there are challenging times, I'm also boosted by the amount of discussions that are happening across Canada, on issues of gender-based violence.
That's a nice segue into what I want to talk to you about next, which is last week, the federal government announced a new crime bill, C-16, that includes some major changes when it comes to violence against women and children. It starts with naming femicide in the criminal code. Can you tell us what is femicide? You've used the term now a couple of times, and why is this significant?
Yeah, I think it's important because it specifically recognizes the crime, as an extreme form of gender-based violence rooted in systemic discrimination and misogyny. And as I said, I think it's important that we're naming it as femicide instead of a generic gender-neutral term like homicide. And I think that distinction is really crucial because, again, it allows us to understand the issue, to track it, and hopefully to prevent the killing of women.
By putting it into the criminal code, there's a couple of outcomes that are different than before. And one of them is that the person who is convicted now faces the same sentencing as somebody who has committed a homicide. Why is that significant in your mind?
Because I think oftentimes sentencing was watered down because of the relationship between the victim and the perpetrator. We saw that a lot, right? Just out of the nature of that relationship, that the sentencing would not be so severe.
I also noted that it doesn't matter if it was planned or deliberate. It's still going to be considered a crime.
I thought that that was an interesting, that was an important distinction.
Does this have any impact, do you think, on people in terms of their actions ahead of time? In other words, you would be more hesitant to do it because you know the penalties are greater. Is it going to have that kind of impact, or is it just on the other side of the justice scale?
It's hard to say, isn't it? I mean, it's really hard to say whether that will be the deterrent that is needed or not.
Another aspect of this legislation is coercive control. Now, many people may not be familiar with that term. Can you explain what that is and what this new legislation is going to do to address this?
Yeah, so the best way to describe coercive control is it's a pattern of generally cumulative acts committed over a period of time. And it's really about controlling behavior, right? So it's often trying to define coercive and controlling behavior is really the reason that keeps so many women in an abusive relationship. It's often not tied to physical violence. It's more about controlling and dominating one person over the other. So it's all those things here you hear about, Robert, around, emotional abuse, financial control. So it's coercive and controlling behavior, which controlling behavior, I think people are more, it's easier to understand that.
I realize in the terminology that's used in the legislation, it talks about psychological violence. How would you describe psychological violence?
Psychological violence is similar to, emotional abuse. And there have been studies that started in like the 70s, right, of coercive control, where they talked about prisoners of war and how that was how people were brainwashed, essentially. Is it was the old term that they used, really, is brainwashing is sort of an easy layperson term of defining what I would say psychological violence.
Can you provide some examples of coercive control and psychological violence that people might be able to relate to?
I think lots of times it's threats of what could happen. Keeping people, they can only use a credit card a certain amount of time. I really think about it more in terms of controlling and threatening behavior for sure.
How is this different than criminal harassment?
I
Because
think
that's
criminal.
what the terms was before when they were trying to prosecute this kind of thing.
Yeah, and I think one of the difficulties in criminalizing coercive control is that it's not an incident-specific act. Which, when people start to dig into whether coercive control is going to fix this issue, I think there's a lot of people who have been doing some research around this, Robert, that have some concerns about it. Because with it, if we're going to do this, we need to start educating the criminal justice system to understand what coercive control is. Because for police officers, they're used to it being an incident-specific incident, right? One act happens and there's either criminal charges laid or not. That is not what coercive control plays out in the gender-based violence world. It's often a pattern of behavior that happens and accumulates over time. Right. So her doubts start, and her doubts about what's happening to her and the seriousness of it accumulates over time. Right. So one little incident then turns into it adds up, shall we say, that each incident adds up to her feeling more controlled by this person and this person being able to control her more. So yeah, it will be interesting to see, and there's certainly been some discussion early on a few years ago when there was a private members bill that came forward around including coercive control in the criminal justice system of family law advocates going, we don't know how it's going to play out in family court either. So I think we need to be, we need to be thinking about how this can play out and how it might not necessarily benefit women in the end. It's similar to, I've heard some scholars describe it in the way that, when we had mandatory charging first come in the 90s, right? And how since that has sometimes been used against women. Because oftentimes then we're seeing women who are equally criminally charged because there's this mandatory charging. So when police go in and there might have been both people being abusive, one of the things that they have to do is try to figure out who's the primary aggressor. So yeah, I think it's I think there are some good things in Bill C-16 because I think it's a step forward in restructuring how violence against women is recognized in law. I think that's a good thing. And I think we just need to be mindful of how we interpret this and it, it, it its impact on women.
It sounds to me like this is going to depend a lot on what how the police and the Crown attorneys are going to move forward when laying charges. What is your sense of the local police and the local courts in terms of their willingness to charge people?
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes there are charges for sure. I think again, sort of figuring out how police are going to look at incidents of coercive control, I think is really, really complex, and it really will require a bit of a shift of how that's being determined. So I think it's something to watch quite closely. Yes, I think it's a step in the right direction for sure. What this new what Bill C-16 will do. However, I think it's really important that the federal government is also listening to women advocates and scholars around gender-based violence to hopefully get this right, that it can make a difference. I think it can, Robert, but I think we need to be working together and really listening to each other as to fully understanding how this looks.
You mentioned earlier about the collaboration between yourself and local police. Is Cornerstone going to be offering training to local police to help this process along?
Yeah, I'm sure that we will. We have over the last year, we've done a lot of training. We continue to do training with Coburg Police Services, Port Hope Police Services. We just did some training with OPP. So I'm very very optimistic. We did a lot of training with the police services around coercive control. We're starting to talk about that. And I was really excited that when I was on a Violence Against Women Coordinating Committee meeting, Scott Bamberge from Coburg Police Services said, one of our officers specifically raised the issue of coercive control and wanted to get Cornerstone involved so that again they're getting a true picture of what's happening within that relationship to to figure out some of these dynamics because as I say coercive control is often not linked to a physically violent attack. However, it is a significant red flag that often leads to femicide.
So when you look at the cases Cornerstone deals with, will these legal changes impact gender-based violence locally?
I hope so.
Another area being addressed by the legislation is non-consensual deepfakes. Can you talk a bit about this?
I don't really know that much about it, Robert. I saw a little bit about it, but I haven't dug in too deep with that one right now.
This is where people take pictures, intimate pictures of individuals, and then post
Yes.
them on the internet. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Is I know you work with young people at the high school level. and they tend to be more social media and in the internet. Is this something of concern around these young people, I wonder?
I would think so for sure. And it's something that we talk about in our prevention program. They do a lot of training and discussion around the use of social media. We talk a lot about, consent and what does consent mean. I think we need to do a lot more work with our schools, with parents. I think it's really the tip of the iceberg, and there's a lot more work to be done for sure.
Well, you've spoken positively about the legislation. What else is needed? What's missing?
I don't think we're going to, I criminal justice plays one part, and we've talked about this before, Robert, for sure. Criminal justice plays one part. I still believe really heavily in prevention. I think we're still not reaching kids early enough. I think we're still not having enough critical conversations with our young boys and young men. We did have a staff person trained in a new program that's rolled out across the province called Coaching Boys into Men. And we have started to have some conversations with our local minor hockey league, hoping that we can get in and do some training with coaches or coaches to start having conversations with young boys and girls in the dressing room around issues such as consent, such as impacts of social media with young boys and girls. So that's a program that we believe in really strongly. I think prevention is critical. I think prevention is something that finally the provincial and federal government are talking about and getting behind of actually of funding those. So the Coaching Boys into Men is a program that was funded through the provincial government through a shelter in Interval House in Hamilton that we are partnering with. So I think we're getting there. I think a lot more needs to be done. But as you know, Robert, in our many conversations over the year, prevention was never funded provincially or federally. So it is showing up at both levels. So we're excited about that because it's absolutely critical. We also know that, issues of poverty affect women and their ability to get out of relationships and stay out of relationships. Housing, as you and I have had so many conversations around that. That's a critical piece of the puzzle. So yeah, there's always lots of work to do. I think education is critical, something that I think Cornerstone does a lot of. We try to, again, continue to do education. We've done a lot with our police services. We continue to do training with paramedics because we see paramedics as first responders who are often going into homes. So we're working really closely with Northumberland paramedics under Susan Brown. Susan was right on board when we proposed this to her. So we've been working with them over the last year. Our staff also just went and did some training with Cobourg Fire Department for the same reasons that, again, the more of us that can identify what is happening and to ask women and make sure that women have the information that they need. Those things are all a step in the right direction. We've always said we can't fix this alone. We need our community. And I think we're doing more and more. And I think in many ways our community is standing up, such as these first responders. They're coming to us when we say we want to do training with them. They're super invested in it. And that's a big step in the right direction, I think, Robert, as well as Northumberland Hills Hospital. As you know, I've come on and talked about the Ryan Inquest. And one of the recommendations was to be doing more training with healthcare, with first responders. So it's something that we've been committed to doing. So we did some e-learning modules for Northumberland Hills Hospital, all the staff, because that's the best way to reach them, because, of course, it's a very large staff group and they all work shifts. So they have been receiving those e-learning modules. So that was an important and exciting initiative that we've taken with our local hospital over the last year.
I was interested when you were talking about prevention and you mentioned about going in and talking to the young hockey players. It was just this few months ago, just this year, that the players in the Hockey Canada sex assault trial were acquitted. Is that part of the motivation why you want to reach out to that particular group and that demographic?
Absolutely. I think it was very difficult trial to watch for sure, and not the outcome that I think any of us were hoping for. And I think again, it was sort of that watershed moment of that result happening that we were like, okay, we got to do something here, because we got a long way to go if that's the mentality. And I think, again, having coaches who young boys look up to do the training. Like, essentially, what we'll do, Robert, is we train the coaches how to have these conversations, which, again, I think is a real great win because, who am I to go in and talk to a bunch of 10-year-old boys, right? I think it's really important that, again, we're having men as allies and men as part of the solution and having conversations with young boys. I think it's got tremendous potential for some really good outcomes. So we're excited about that initiative. We started some initial conversations with our local hockey association. So I think we just need a few a few strong advocates with minor hockey, as well as, it doesn't just have to be hockey. Like, again, we thought it was a good place to start, and we had a couple connections that I was like, I think we can lean on these guys. But it's not to say it's just going to be hockey. I think, again, there's the potential for some really great work in Northumberland County to reach our young folks.
You mentioned about getting some funding for court services, and you also spoke about your prevention programs not being properly funded. How is your funding going? How is the budgets for 2025 and 2026?
Yeah, we did receive an increase through our provincial, through MCCSS, which we were very happy about, for family court as well as some shelter beds. So that was a big win for our sector. We have been doing, as you know, Robert, tireless work of talking about the importance of funding our sector, because even with the funding, we still have to raise a lot of money. We're not adequately funded, but having that increase from our provincial government was great. I'm not going to discount that. It helps tremendously, and it was annualized funding, which was even more exciting because, as you know, and I've talked about, I'm sure, project specific grants. Oh boy. Yeah, it's not a funding model. It's not sustainable. You get a year, you get 2 years, you develop a project program, and you got it for a year or 2 years, and then the funding is lost. So, our nonprofits have, bared that brunt for way too long, that it's just not sustainable. So, thanks to the provincial government, again, this government, through OAIS, our association, who has done tireless work, to advocate to get adequate funding for our sector. They recently listened, and again, our family court support, which has been so underfunded for more than a decade, I want to say, Robert, probably 15, 16 years. We were grossly underfunded, and again, a really important program. So we're going to be able to reach more women that need family court support. So that's really exciting. And also, we receive some funding from the province for what we have considered unfunded beds in the shelter. So it takes a bit of relief off. So that's good news.
Your press release talks about the Wrapped Encourage campaign and the flag raisings and the support from the community. And we see all these pictures and politicians saying how important it is to acknowledge all these important dates and commemorations we talked about earlier. But are these activities and words moving the needle locally? Why or why not?
I think it does. Again, I think municipally we don't receive any municipal dollars. So there's that. I think provincially, I think we do have the ear of the provincial government, this sector, which is interesting. But we have got the ear of them. As I say, I think us being here and staying open during COVID, I think caught people's attention, because if all of the shelters across women's shelters closed up shop during COVID, we would have been in big trouble, and we didn't. So I think our ability to be a resilient sector, which we are, a resourceful sector, and a sector that doesn't give up, perhaps served us to, again, maintain the ear of the provincial government. So I'm really proud about what OAuth and, EDs across the province continue to do with the province, because that's where we receive our dollars.
And what is OAuth?
OA, sorry, is Ontario Association of Interval and Transition Houses.
Last year, when we spoke about the Emergency Care Establishment Bylaw, it had just been introduced. Now that we are a year later, how much is it impacting your operation?
It adds another layer to jumping through some hoops, and needing to. We just reapplied, so this is our second application. It was fairly straightforward for us, Robert, because we are provincially funded and we're an accredited organization. So we have a lot of rigor already within our operational standards that made it pretty straightforward for us. I think locally, I think our reputation has been quite positive over more than 40 years, which I think allowed us for it to be fairly straightforward for us. So yeah, it's certainly, it's nothing that we wanted. That's for sure. But again, it's something that was put upon us, so we needed to ensure that we worked collaboratively with the town of Cobourg to ensure that we're in compliance with the ECE bylaw, which we have been. We've had an inspection. It ended up being fine. And we will just be submitting our second license renewal, I think is the right word.
What should people watch for in 2026?
I think people should watch for hopefully more prevention programming. Hopefully we can roll out coaching boys into men a little bit more across Northumberland County. So I think our prevention efforts are going to be quite rigorous. We've just begun our strategic planning process. Again, I think education, getting word out across Northumberland County, is very much embedded in there. I think our continued efforts in wellness of our staff is top of the list. We have a dynamic and amazing group of people, but the work is hard. The work is strenuous. So that was sort of something that we will be doing internally anyways, but something that's really important to make sure that our staff are well compensated, are well cared for, so that they continue to do the hard work. I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with federal government with Bill C-16. I think that will be fairly interesting. I think it will be interesting to see what happens municipally in the election in October 2026. Yeah, so hopefully, again, we continue to build great partnerships with our community, more education. Yeah, hopefully 2026 is going to be a good year, Robert.
I'm curious, you mentioned the municipal election. What, why did you mention that?
Well, I think again, I think municipally looking at what might happen with the ECE bylaw, I think that will be an interesting thing for us to keep an eye on, and to see what happens within our local community. We haven't typically had to pay a lot of attention to municipal politics at Cornerstone until the ECE bylaw came up. So I think it's important that we do have our ear to that, because it could have some implications for our organization and into the future of what that could mean for what that could mean for our shelter.
Nancy Johnson, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you so much, Robert.
That was Nancy Johnson, Executive Director of Cornerstone Family Violence Prevention Center. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.